Hey, you guys. Movie retrospective time. Going back to the 80s this time around, which we usually do. We do the 80s a lot, although yeah. I kind of feel like we do the 70s more. This is a movie that came out in early 1986. It's weird because I was looking it up earlier. Wikipedia has it right. It actually did come out in February of 1986. But a bunch of other sites like IMDb and stuff have it listed as 1985, but I don't really know why. But this is the movie House.
Yeah.
Now, this movie, as well as the sequel, House 2, The Second Story, I feel like those two movies were on cable all the fucking time. Because I think I saw both of these movies at least two or three dozen times when I was growing up.
I wasn't in the United States at the time. I was in Brazil, so I didn't catch it on cable. But this movie was even popular in Brazil. But we were renting it.
Yeah, because I feel, well, the cover of this, of the first one, is great. With, like, that zombie hand, like, ringing the doorbell, and it says, ding dong, you're dead on it. So it had, like, a really, really great cover. So I feel like it was kind of, like, one that got rented a lot of times. And this movie, I didn't even realize until I was rewatching this, because I've, like, watched it several times subsequently. I didn't actually realize that this had been directed by Steve Miner, who did Friday the 13th 2 and 3, and also was produced by Sean S. Cunningham, who also produced Friday the 13th 2 and 3, among other things. He also did Last House on the Left, the Wes Craven movie. And it was written by Fred Decker, who did Night of the Creeps and Monster Squad.
All right.
So this really has, like, oh, and also Harry Manfredini, the guy that did the music for all the Friday the 13th movies. He did the music for this as well.
It has a good score.
I really like the music for this. And it's funny because this is kind of like, I had forgotten how strange this movie is. The second one is probably weirder. And there's actually three sequels to this. They're all standalone. Like, they don't really have anything to do with one another. Other than just being kind of weird, or at least the first two were kind of weird.
There's something kind of Spielbergian about the tone of this movie, though. Imagine if Spielberg did kind of like a horror comedy. It feels like that. It has a very middle-class America mom apple pie and Chevrolet feel to it. It just feels very American for that era. I like it.
But then it's like bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, the story is just so weird. Like I said, it's not as weird as the second one. I feel like the second one, this one is for sure a horror comedy. The second one, I think, is like way more comedy and like less horror. This one is kind of like a balance between the two, but it's still like a really strange, because I think what ended up happening was that the original script of this was, you remember Twilight Zone, the movie?
Yeah.
Which came out in 1983, which I think we did a review of it a while back, which that's one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite anthology movies for sure. So I kind of feel like after that came out, the original script for this movie was actually going to be one segment of an anthology movie that was inspired by Twilight Zone, the movie. So I feel like a lot of the creatures and stuff that turn up in this are sort of like almost paying direct homage to some of the monsters, particularly in the, you know, in the segment with Anthony and like the crazy monsters, like the, you know, the one that's kind of like, it was an updating of, you know, the kid that could wish people into the cornfield, you know, and that it had like all these kind of wacky monsters in it. This kind of has that kind of vibe to it, but you can tell that it maybe started out as a darker story because it also has like, you know, kids in peril. It has like the whole PTSD Vietnam veteran type angle to it as well. So like I said, this is one of those movies like from the 80s that you really can't replicate this tone because it's just so odd. You know what I'm saying?
I kind of see what you're saying, but maybe because I grew up with movies like this, it seems normal to me.
Well, yeah, it seemed normal to me as well.
Yeah.
It only seemed weird to me, like, in retrospect, I guess.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at it in the context of the time.
Yeah.
Like, the Vietnam veteran angle was perfect because that's how old the boomers were at the time that this was going on. Your Vietnam veterans were the same age. They wouldn't have been that old at this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A Vietnam veteran would have been in his 30s. You know,
like this guy is.
Yeah.
This character.
So that's still young. So they were marketing to them. And they were in the middle class by this point, or supposedly, depending on what state you lived in, you know, and what your job was. And he's a successful writer, and a lot of boomers, Vietnam veterans, fucking fit that profile. I mean, a lot of them were in Hollywood, you know?
That's true.
That were boomers, boomer Vietnam veterans. They were living like that. Who's the special effects guy who was basically doing that same thing, going around to conventions and making movies?
Who, Tom Savini?
Tom Savini, yeah. Yeah. So, in a way, the main character is kind of like a Tom Savini, in a way. He's a horror writer.
Yeah.
Who's going to conventions all the time. And a Vietnam veteran. And yeah, it's the same basic demographics that Tom Savini
Yeah, that's been. True. All that's right. true.
So it's not that weird.
Yeah.
When you look at it in the context of the time. And he's kind of an all-American Joe. And he inherits this damn house. And it turns out he believes the house is haunted. And it had a lot of good touches to the story. You know, his aunt who raised him left behind these mysterious paintings that were used as clues to find certain things out that the house could do, you know. Kind of reminded me of Rawhead Rex with the stained glass window that had the clues in it and shit, you know. It was kind of a good little touch, you know.
I did actually like that. I think, yeah. Honestly, I kind of think the best thing about this movie is the weirdness.
Yeah.
The funny relationship between the main character, Roger Cobb, who's played by William Catt, and his neighbor, played by George Wendt.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. And the creatures are great. Like, just the wacky, like, practical effects in this.
Yeah, I remember it in the context of the time. The creatures actually looked a lot more real than they look now. Like, you know, the costume of the Vietnam veteran,
yeah.
The skeleton guy coming back from Vietnam. What was his name again? Bull, or what was the name of that character? Bull, right?
Well, yeah, it was Bull from Night Court, but the actor's name is Richard Mall.
Richard Mall. But what was the name of the damn character he was
playing? Ben.
Big Ben, that's what it was. Yeah, the Big Ben outfit. I remembered it looking pretty convincing. I see it now, at least on HD. It looks kind of like something out of damn Power Rangers or something. You know, it's not convincing, but it's still a good costume. It's a practical effect.
That is actually, I thought that was a costume with Richard Mullen. It's not. It's a puppet. That's an animatronic puppet.
The 3D man walking around with the M60?
Yeah.
I don't believe it. That was a man in a suit.
I mean, I think sometimes it was a man in a suit, but a lot of times it was a big, huge animatronic puppet.
Maybe when they zoomed in on it. But when he was running around in the house with that M60, that was a man. It had to be.
Yeah, it probably was. But like I said, they did have... wasn't always that. Like, sometimes it was, like, a big animatronic puppet. Which, like I said, they really did a lot of, like, amazing, like, animatronic puppet work.
Yeah, it looked good. It looked good. It was entertaining.
Yeah, it's not realistic.
No, it just wasn't realistic.
But this movie, the premise of this movie is not realistic. So you just kind of have to, like...
The whole tone is just fun. Haunted house fun. There is some creepy shit to it. So it didn't have to look realistic in the context of the movie.
Yeah.
It was just had to be entertaining. It was.
So like I said, this almost kind of reminded me, and it was interesting because I didn't realize at first that this had been originally intended to be part of a, anthology that was like a homage to the Twilight Zone, the movie, because this actually really does remind me of that segment of the Twilight Zone movie with, you know, Anthony and the monsters and stuff, because that one was like kind of dark and creepy too, but then it had like this wacky, like kind of weird, surreal, cartoonish kind of thing. You know what's weird about this that I didn't realize? This movie was actually rated R, which I don't really think it needed to be, because a lot of the violence and stuff in it, It's not gory. It's mostly like kind of cartoony, like puppety type of monsters.
Yeah, the context of the time. This may have been before, what was it, NC-17 and PG-13 may have not been around at that time.
No, PG-13 came around in 84, I want to say. Because I think it was like Gremlins or a movie like that that kind of inspired it. I mean, Gremlins came out like a year or two before this.
I put it at the same level as Gremlins, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of like a similar... Yeah, it's like a similar tone to Gremlins. So I guess there was like that kind of thing going on out of the 80s.
Yeah, I don't see how it would have been rated R.
No, I don't see that either.
It's
like
gotta
I said,
be a mistake. Maybe it wasn't.
No, it was.
It was?
But I just don't... I don't really know why it needed to be. Like I said, because this seems like a classic PG-13.
Yeah.
You could let kids watch this.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be bothered by kids watching this.
No. There's nothing gross in it.
No. It's like I said,
I don't even think there was any sexual innuendo in it, really.
Not really.
No.
No nudity.
Uh-uh.
No blood, I don't think. Well, maybe a little bit, but it's not like not anything real egregious.
Something about the censors, they thought that it should have been a rated R, which I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either. Maybe it was more like thematic elements, because like I said, it doesn't seem real violent. And like I said, it's almost more, there's some dark shit in it, but it's mostly a comedy.
Today it'd have been a PG.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the story behind this, like I said, you have William Catt, who had been in horror movies before, obviously. He was in Carrie back in 1976. With his big, fabulous Peter Frampton hair. Yeah, he did. That was the name of the character.
Yeah.
And he was also, I don't know how much people in other countries like know about this, but there was a show called The Greatest American Hero, which ran from 81 to 86, I want to say.
Yeah, it was a superhero.
It was kind of like a superhero, so he was in that. So that's kind of what he was known for. And so he plays a writer, as we said, whose name is Roger Cobb. He's a very successful horror author. But he's also a Vietnam veteran, and his, you know, his latest book, he wants to make it kind of like a memoir of his time in Vietnam, because apparently he's got some PTSD issues with something that happened there that's like haunting him, which you don't find out until later on in the movie. And he's also kind of had some other shitty things going on in the past year of his life, in that his kid, Jimmy, disappeared mysteriously from this house, like his aunt's house. And then his wife, who was an actress on a soap opera, she ended up divorcing him, even though they seem like they're still on fairly good terms. But he's, like, having some problems. So then his aunt, who owns this big, creepy Victorian house, it's not actually creepy. It's actually, like, really nice.
And I couldn't believe it had a very modern backyard with a modern swimming pool and a bunch of cool shit that you only saw in the 80s.
Well, they built some of that. They built on that is a real house, and they did actually shoot in there. Yeah. But some of the yard like didn't look that great, so they had to like bring in landscapers and like put in a sidewalk and shit like that, like to get what they wanted.
Okay.
But overall, I think they painted the outside of the house as well.
So they must have built that pool modern because they, there's no
I
way
think
that was
maybe they did. Well, yeah, that would have been a later addition.
Right.
But yeah, so the kid actually disappeared mysteriously. Like he's basically, you know, the dad. They show a flashback. Like he sees him in the pool. And then he jumps in the pool to get him because he thinks he's drowning and then he can't find him. So it's almost kind of like he's gone to some other dimension. They don't know if he got kidnapped or it's like they don't know where he went. And so, you know, his life has kind of fallen into the shitter at this point. So his wife's left him, as I mentioned. His aunt, who owns this house, commits suicide in the house. She hangs herself. That's like the first 5 minutes of the movie. And so since he is her only living relative, he ends up inheriting the house. And even though he's talking to the real estate agent and the real estate agent is assuming that he's just going to sell it, he actually decides, even though his aunt has died in this house and even though his son has disappeared from this house and even though his aunt was pretty convinced that this place was haunted, he decides he's going to stay there because he thinks that it's going to, like, he can have some solitude and, like, work on his new book and sort of exorcise some demons. Now, subsequently, some pretty crazy shit starts happening in this house. Among which are, let's see, what ends up happening first? Well, the first things that happen, like he starts hearing weird noises.
Yeah.
There's like noise up in this closet, like up in this bedroom or whatever. And he goes up there and sometimes it's a regular closet. And then sometimes it's like all black and like this big fucking monster comes out of there. Like this really creepy, like fucking monster comes out.
There are doorways or portals to other dimensions in the damn house.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like from the outset, I think they kind of set it up at first. Like you're not really sure if maybe he's just losing his shit and he's just seeing stuff in there. But honestly, I think the whole premise is that I think the first supernatural thing he sees is he sees his aunt's ghost. Like he goes up to the room and like she's standing there like a normal person. And she says, the house fooled me or the house tricked me and it'll trick you too. Like I didn't think the house could trick me, but it did. So you're led to believe that whatever it was that was in the house, like tricked her into seeing things and made her kill herself. You know what I'm saying? So all of the stuff that you see happen to him in the movie isn't necessarily real, and it isn't necessarily all in his head either. The house is haunted, but the implication is that the house uses your own shit against you, like your own nightmares, because he starts having like non-flashbacks. Yeah. And, you know, stuff about, like, he sees, like, his kid, like, waving from a window and stuff like that, because that's, you know, where the kid disappeared from. So you're led to believe that the house is kind of, like, haunted, but in a personalized kind of way.
Yeah, now let me say something about the Nam flashbacks and the Nam story. The Nam story is interesting. It's part of the whole overarching story behind him and the house and what happens and fucking Big Bear coming back or whatever his name
Big
is.
Ben.
Big Ben coming back. But how Vietnam is actually portrayed, the uniforms, fucking the missions that they're doing, total bullshit, totally unrealistic, but just roll with it, you know?
Well, and honestly it is, but I don't mind it because in the context of the movie,
the tone is the same.
Yeah. The tone of it is the same. And two, you're seeing the Vietnam flashbacks filtered through his memory of them because he's writing about them.
Yeah,
and also it's the house that's like throwing like curveballs at you.
Yeah.
Because apparently this house knows what your weak points are. So it will kind of like show you things that it knows will specifically upset you.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. They don't go too much into that. It's basically just kind of like, you know, he sees like, you know, he sees his aunt's ghost and that's pretty creepy. And then he sees like this creepy monster that comes out of this closet that's sometimes there and sometimes not. He buys all these cameras like he's going to like film it.
Yeah.
But then sometimes, like, he tries to film it and it's not there. And then, like, he starts, like I said, he sees his kid, you know, kind of waving. So he sees serious shit, but then he sees, like, wacky shit, too, because he sees, like, the fucking swordfish that I guess was his... Oh, his uncle killed it, right?
Yeah.
Like, at a fishing tournament a long time ago. And it, like, comes to life like a Billy the Big Mouth Bass type.
Yeah,
like, it's like, it's like mouth is moving and, like, shit like that. And he ends up, like, shooting it.
Shooting it with a shotgun, yeah.
Yeah, because he... So, like I said, during that part of the movie, it's almost kind of like they're setting it up like he's, you know, just lost it. You know what I mean? He's just, like, crazy and he's seeing things. Particularly when you get this one point where... his neighbor, he's played by George Wendt, is like this super... I really like the interactions between the two of them because, like, George Wendt is, like, so fucking funny in this. And he's, like, super, super nosy. Like, he just, like, walks in the house, like, with beers, like, hey, what's up? And it's blah, blah, blah. And he's, like, just crawling up his, like, ass all the time. So he basically straight up steals Roger's, like, you know... address book or whatever, because like I said, his ex-wife is famous, like she's on it, so, and he knows, so the neighbor knows who she is. So he like calls her and is like, hey, you need to come up here because I think like your ex-husband is like losing his mind. And so she turns up, or so you think, and so you're not really sure if she's there, because then she comes in the house and she's like, oh, you know, somebody called me, I was worried about you, and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, she bends down, and then she comes back up, and she's this big, huge, what do they even call that? I think the name of the monster, like, for the movie, they called it the Sandy Witch, because her name was Sandy. But she's this big, huge, like, fat, like, with these big fucking lips and, like, these big, like, red fingernails and stuff. And it's like, so he shoots it. But then it looks like his actual wife is laying on the porch. Like, he's, oh my God, he actually, like, killed his wife. But apparently he didn't. But he thinks that he did.
So there's all kinds of illusions and mind control and stuff.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of like the whole thing, is that the house is just making him see things. Yeah. So you're not, it's not a question of like, oh, is he crazy or anything like that. It's just, it's the house is working on his... fears and is working on his guilt and his memories and stuff like that. Because like I said, in the third act, you find out that like when he was back in Nam and, you know, Big Ben like got shot up, and then he was just like, oh, I'm not going to make it. You need to kill me. And Roger couldn't kill him. And then Big Ben ended up getting like captured by the Vietnamese, and they tortured him. And it's like, he was like, I'll get you, Roger, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, whether that really happened or not, like, that maybe did happen, but I think that Roger's, like, memory of that was, like, haunting him, and so that's why the house was using the Big Ben character that, like, came back all zombified to, you know, just like, oh, I'm the one that kidnapped your son, and I'm the one that did this and that and the other. Because it's weird, I've seen, like, a lot of reviews of this movie. I kind of feel like this is one that... a lot of people have like a lot of affection for it from the 80s because, like I said, it's one that was sort of like a video store staple, like, because that cover was so great and it was just like so iconic. And I feel like it was on cable all the time. So it's like, I feel like I ended up seeing it like a zillion times.
Yeah. You know, for you guys that are too young to remember video stores and Blockbuster and shit like that. On a Friday or Saturday night when you were a teenager, you drive down there with your friend to go get some movies. You probably were going to take three or four of them. But on a Friday, chances are that the movies that you wanted to see were gone. So there were second and third echelon movies, and some of them you had already seen, so you'd get those anyway. So you'd get one that you already saw before. Because back in those days, you didn't have streaming on demand.
Yeah, you could just watch whatever the hell you wanted.
You could just watch whatever you wanted. So you're like, well, we got to see three movies, man. Well, shit, we saw this one, but it's good. Let's get it again. So it was nothing for us and our generation to watch a movie 5, 6, 7, 8 times. It would happen a lot, especially if it was on cable.
Well, yeah, some of those movies on cable.
Saw some of them 20 times.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, every time it was on, if you didn't have anything else going on, you're like, oh, what the hell, I'll just watch that again.
Yeah, and you were watching it off and on. You'd look at it for about 20, 30 minutes, and then you'd do something else, and, oh, good part's coming, and then you'd watch it again. you'd watch it for a certain scene, and you had the shit was burned into your mind. It was a different time.
Yeah.
And so sometimes a movie that if you saw it once, you didn't like it. But if you, after you'd seen it 4 or 5 times, you liked it a lot more. And this was one of them. It's kind of like this.
Yeah, this is kind of one. Like I said, I saw it like... I kind of feel like a lot of reviewers like this one, like a, you know, it's kind of like a forgotten 80s movie.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, its tone is, if you're not used to seeing a lot of 80s movies or this type of 80s movies, like, the tone of it is very strange. It kind of, like, in the sense of, like, it being a horror comedy, but not like a horror comedy like they would make nowadays. You know what I'm saying? It just, it really gives me that Twilight Zone the movie vibe. It gives me a little bit of vibe like The Burbs. Or something like that, where they were making these kind of really, really dark, fucked up stories, but then they were like kind of goofy and cartoonish at the same time. And I kind of feel like that's a hard tone to pull off. So if you're not really used to that, like, you can just be watching this going, what the fuck is going on? And I kind of feel like a lot of reviewers I saw, even if they liked the movie, I don't think they understood that it was the house that was making him see a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. It's funny because even when I was watching, I'd seen this many times, and even in watching it again, my mind would still kind of wander, you know what I mean, away from the story, and then be pulled back later, because I think when you've seen things so many times, sometimes you stop paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I can see how maybe a person who had never seen this before, maybe their mind wandered a little bit and didn't quite catch what the movie was implying, especially because... Back in this day, the storytelling and the way movies were edited, we kind of not like movies of today because they didn't have the special effects to make something totally clear all the time. There was a certain culture of knowing what the movie meant by certain things. You know what I mean?
Or just not really caring.
Or not
much
caring.
About it.
But a lot of times we knew what the director was meant because there were other movies at the time that did kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And you didn't need the exposition because you're recognizing this ploy from the movie, from another movie that gave the exposition. And in this movie, I'm going, no, it's making him see ghost images.
It's showing him things that are going to be meaningful to him.
Yeah, and they're not there.
Yeah.
Right.
And some of this stuff really did happen because, right. I mean, George Wendt, the neighbor, his name's Howard or Harold, I'm sorry, in the movie. He does come over and he sees the closet monster. So the shit is there.
Right.
But the house seems to tailor what it's seeing, right. what you see, like, yeah. to what is going to scare you the most or what's going to upset you.
Right. And that kind of came from movies, you know, like fucking Amityville Horror. And then it's kind of implied sometimes in Evil Dead that some of the things he sees in the shack didn't actually happen. It was just like a ghostly apparition. But then later, things do actually grab him. There are zombies.
Yeah.
So, at least if I remember correctly, I think, in The Evil Dead.
This actually, now that you mention it, some parts of this give me a little bit of an Evil Dead 2 vibe as well.
It does.
Particularly the one part where he goes into the bathroom mirror, and that's almost like Lovecraftian for a second, because it's just like this black void, and then these tentacles come out, and then he goes in there, and it's just this big black nothingness, and then this like skull thing with like big bat wings comes and like shoots him with a shotgun and stuff like that. That's very Evil Dead-ish.
That's what I was going to say during the wrap-up. Of this video, I was going to say, I'll just say it now. It's kind of like a mixture of Evil Dead and Gremlins.
Yeah, and Twilight Zone the movie.
Twilight Zone the movie.
Or at least that third, one. The one with Anthony.
I can kind of see it.
Yeah.
But for me, it felt more like Evil Dead and Gremlins. The tone. Tone-wise, Gremlins.
Yeah.
But story-wise, more like Evil Dead.
But not gory, not over the top gory, more like cartoonish.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's like I said, if that sounds like something that if you haven't seen this, because I feel like this is one that doesn't get talked about all that much when people bring up 80s stuff. Now this is actually streaming on Amazon Prime. If you have that, I believe it's also on Tubi for free. And I think the second one is on there too, House 2, The Second Story, which I also have some affection for, although that's way more wacky and like way more comedy. Again, the sequels, there are three of them, are standalone. They don't have anything to do with each other, so you can watch them all as separate movies. There was also, and I didn't actually realize this, House 3 was actually not called House 3. I didn't even know this was the same series. It was only called House 3 in Europe. Here it was called The Horror Show. So I actually saw that movie without even realizing that it was supposed to be House 3, because like I said, it doesn't have anything to do with the first movie.
Right.
Now House 4, The Repossession, I think is called. I think, I haven't seen it, but I read that they did actually get William Catt back for that one. So maybe it does have some kind of link to the first one, but none of them are even like in the same house or anything like that, so it's like not, I mean, the second one has that weird like caterpillar puppy and like a dead pirate or a prospector with like a crystal skull and like all
that
of a sudden that one's fucking crazy. The only thing about the second one that's kind of the same is that there's a house with like these doors that pull you into like these wacky ass dimensions.
So House 3 kind of pulled a Troll 2.
Yeah.
Where the movie's not related to anything else. They just gave it a damn title. I think that's a trip that the first Troll was called Troll 2. To make you think there was a first one.
Well, you know, the Boggy Creek 2 and The Legend Continues was actually Boggy Creek 3.
Yeah.
But it's just because they made a Boggy Creek 2 and no one gave a shit about it. So he's like, God damn it, we're going to make another second one.
Cause nobody saw it.
That's
fucking funny.
But yeah, so like until I didn't even, I had seen like a House 2 like many, many times. But I didn't even realize that there were two more and that they didn't have anything to do with the first movie either. So, you know, but yeah, so I think that at least the first two are on Tubi, and the first one's on Amazon Prime as well. It might also be on Shudder. I'm actually not sure, but yeah, if anything we said, if you liked Gremlins, if you liked Twilight Zone the movie, if you liked like Evil Dead, this is that type of vibe to it. You know what I mean? So it's that kind of like sort of cartoony, but also kind of like weird, surreal type of shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like if that's kind of your jam and you haven't seen it, then you should probably check it out. Because it was like, it's really weird and it's like really entertaining. I don't know if that's just nostalgia talking, because I saw this movie so much in the 80s and so I just have this affection for it.
It's partly nostalgia because we see these movies and they're kind of comforting because we know the era, we know the thinking that was behind the movie.
Yeah.
It kind of takes us back. So that's an element that a young person wouldn't have. Although I think some young people who are into retro shit would like this.
They'd yeah. Like it. Oh, yeah. I definitely would. Yeah. Because they don't make movies like this anymore.
No, they don't make it. And in a way, they're trying to. They need to make movies like this again.
Yeah.
It's just that if they would, it probably wouldn't get much attention unless it was put out on Shudder.
Yeah.
It'd be like a Shudder original. And some of the Shudder originals are trying to harken back to this time.
Yeah, or trying to kind of replicate this tone. Which, like I said, you can't do it, like, entirely because, you know, a lot of the context of the 70s and 80s, because we don't live in that era anymore.
Yeah.
But I do respect that people are trying to, like, replicate that yeah, that tone from that
era. It
was
kind of a comforting feel to it, just the way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't notice that?
Yeah.
It's kind of a comforting feel. And I think it's just because from our point of view, it's so normal American.
Yeah, like 80s middle class
normal,
America.
Yeah, like Back to the Future or shit like that. Just like normal American stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely has that type of vibe to it, right, too. But way weirder.
Yeah. Matt, it's like weird shit happening in normal America, and that's what you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
All right. So that will do it for our review of 1986's House. Check it out if you haven't seen it, because I feel like I said, it's sort of one that doesn't get talked about a lot. And we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.